Furch, if your primary connection with fish is through your local Friday Fish Fry, our next guest would like to help expand our undersea horizons and see fish for what she says they really are, complex, social, intelligent animals. Marine biologist, writer, and broadcaster Helen Scales teaches in Cambridge in the UK. Her books include Spirals in Time and her latest, just out in paperback, Eye of the Shoal, A Fish Watcher's Guide to Life, the Ocean, and Everything. Helen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Well, you are really into fish now. Can you tell about your origin story, though? You were initially interested in seeing, I believe, some sea otters.
Yeah, that's right. So I was always a nature kid growing up. I loved being outside. I loved the great outdoors. I loved nature in a kind of big, general, wild way. But yeah, in my kind of early teens, I was a big sea otter fan, really big sea otter fan. And I came on this wonderful trip to California, the first time I'd ever been to the United States. My parents took me on this trip of a lifetime. And we were in kind of central California, looking out over the sea. And there were sea otters playing in the kelp. And I loved it. They were wonderful. They were as wonderful as I was hoping. But then a kind of unexpected thing happened, which I think more like reflecting on later, I look back and realized maybe that was what happened to me. The fish in me began while I was there. And as well as watching sea otters, I noticed these amazing shoals of fish were being chased around by another mammal of the oceans, seals. There were these wonderful, I think maybe sea lions actually, chasing these shoals of fish around. And I was really mesmerized just by the shape and the movement of these balls of fish that were splitting apart and coming back together, and the sea lions were chasing. And as far as I could tell, they weren't actually eating any of these fish. And yeah, it's just kind of an unexpected moment for me, I think, especially looking back on it, I think, and seeing that I sort of was really drawn to those simpler creatures, I guess, in some ways, these fish compared to the mammals, which are more like myself. And it wasn't much longer after that I started learning to scuba dive. And then after that, just wanted to spend as much time as I could down beneath the waves with the fish.
And in this book, you're trying to get the rest of us as excited about fish as you are. And that's a tall order, I think, because we've, you know, fish, okay, we'll eat them. We'll have them as mildly entertaining, low-maintenance pets. But you say there's a lot more under the sea and lake or whatever when it comes to fish. Can you share some of that excitement with us?
Yeah, I guess that really is the point of the book, is I felt incredibly drawn to these animals when I first saw them in their own environment. When the first time I was on a dive and I saw one little fish, and I suddenly felt like I was in its world. I was in this three-dimensional space, which is completely different to the world I knew. And this wonderful animal was just hovering in front of me. And I just felt myself wanting to know more about its life and how it lives in this very strange realm that I know nothing about. But I think that's the deal with fish, is that for all these reasons that they're food and that they live in this other world that we don't inhabit, it's very easy to think of them as being very different to ourselves, to us land-dwelling vertebrates that walk around and breathe the air. And because fish are so different when we don't see them so much, I think it is really easy to overlook them and to not realize just how diverse they are and how intelligent they are and how beautiful they can be. And I guess that's the idea of the book, really, is to look under the waves, to encourage people actually in real life or just through the book or through TV shows, everything else, to stick your head beneath the waterline and look into the world of the fish and begin to really see and appreciate that there's so much more going on than we give them credit for.
You use the word intelligent, and that's one of the things that surprised me, I got to say, the most about your book, that there's a lot more intelligence among fish and a lot more social, observable social behavior among groups of fish than I would have thought. Can you talk about what we've learned about fish social life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of the most important aspects, actually, that it's really, we really do think of like generalization of a fish is this kind of tiny-brained, you know, cold-blooded kind of dumb thing that doesn't feel pain, that doesn't have these sort of social interactions as we might imagine for birds or for mammals. But fish do this. And the more we look and the more we dive and we spend time with fish and study them, we see some really cool things happening. And we've definitely been underestimating the intelligence of fish, I think. And there's some really, really cool examples. One of my favorite is this little thing called the cleaner wrasse, this little tiny fish about the size of your forefinger and your thumb. That's about the size it would be. And these guys are the cleaners of coral reefs. So all around the world, you'll see these little things swimming around, and they pick clean other fish. They pick off parasites and bits of dead skin. But in order to be able to do that, they actually have to be pretty intelligent. For simple things like they don't want to march straight up to a fish that could potentially eat them and start cleaning them and picking off the parasites, knowing that actually, you know, this is a bigger fish that's a predator. So they know how to control the behavior of those other fish by giving them a massage. They actually give them a little back rub to say, this is okay, I'm just going to clean you here, don't eat me. And these tiny fish, which have tiny brains, have evolved really complex social lives. They've learned how to interact with these other species of fish and to basically advertise their services as the cleaners. And they're really important. Without those little fish, the other fish, the bigger fish, would get sick. They would get really, really sick. And we know that from studies we've seen. If there's no cleaners, then the reef is just not doing as well. But intelligence and smart behavior is a really key part of their success as these vital little cleaning fish. And you wouldn't really guess that from something that looks so small and kind of insignificant. They're really cool things.
We're talking to marine biologist Helen Scales about her book, Eye of the Shoal. Helen, one personal interest of mine is I think of fish, if you can define fish in one way, it's that they have gills and they don't have lungs, which is true, except when it isn't. There are fish with lungs, including lungfish. Why are there some fish with lungs?
It's confusing, isn't it? Fish are really slippery things to define. And yeah, then you go find something like a lungfish and everything gets a bit more complicated. But actually, I mean, kind of the reason that fish do have features like that is they've been around for a long time, and they were the first vertebrates that evolved way before any of us lot that live out here on land. And in some ways, you could say that all the other vertebrates, the reptiles, the birds, the mammals, the amphibians, all of us guys, evolved from fish. So we're highly evolved fish, if you like. We share common ancestors with fish way back. And so some of those features, things like, well, it's the swim bladder that fish have, this balloon of air, which most fish use to keep themselves buoyant underwater. But it does function as a lung in some fish too. And that really could be a sort of a precursor to the lungs that we have. It's not quite directly, like it doesn't quite work the same way, but we certainly share an ancestor that had the beginnings of what in our lineage became lungs, and for these fish, they have lungs too. And it does make sense. They live in water, but the lungfish live often in quite stagnant water that doesn't have much oxygen in it. So being able to actually take a lungful of air is pretty helpful. And the really cool thing that lungfish do is that if the water dries out completely, they can chew themselves a burrow in the mud of the river, and they crawl into their little burrow, seal themselves off, and for up to 4 years they can survive, and they can be absorbing oxygen from the air, and that's pretty amazing. A fish that can live for 4 years out of water.
You've been swimming with a lot of different kinds of fish in places all over the world. Is there one that would be on your wish list or dream list, maybe even one that would be physically difficult for a human to swim around with?
Oh, that's such a good question. That really is. I guess I would have to go, if I'm allowed to really bend the rules a bit, I would love to go swimming with some of the ones that live in the very deepest parts of the ocean. There's no way I would physically be able to do that, I don't think. But if that were possible, there are just some of the most extraordinary and strange fish, and all of the animals really that live in the deep sea are pretty wacky. But I would love to see something like one of the anglerfish, one of the ones that have these amazing abilities to glow in the dark. Oh, I'd love to swim with a fish that glows in the dark. They have these lures that dangle down in front of their mouths to attract prey. Yes, please. I'd like to see one of those. That would be amazing.
And did I read you right? Some of these deep sea fish, there are some species where there are probably trillions on this earth.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So we're talking about these wonderful, fairly small fish, about the size of a sardine or an anchovy. They look sort of similar. Those two also have the ability to light up. They're bioluminescent. And yeah, we think there are estimates that they do occur in their trillions, in the deep ocean, open water. So they live in what we call the twilight zone, about 1,000 meters, 3,000 feet roughly down, where there's just a little bit of light coming down still from the sun. Mostly it's a kind of dark, deep blue color, hence the twilight. And every night they all will rush up to the surface of the sea to feed in the darkness. And they are just, it's the biggest migration of vertebrates on the planet. We have this enormous movement of these fish coming up. And then as the sun rises in the morning, they go back down to hide in the dark depths again. And yeah, there are billions and trillions of these fish. And hundreds of species. We're still finding new species of these things. still working out how important they are. It's quite likely they play a key role in the climate, that they help to bring carbon down into the deep, so that this is helping us with climate change potentially, and presumably food for a whole bunch of other animals too. So they're really important fish, and I would love to see that too. Yeah, could I swim with those as well, please? That would be great.
Well, in our last minute or so, is there a particular fish myth you'd like to break for us?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess I would really like to bust the myth, or continue to bust the myth. People have done it before me, but people also do still keep believing this idea that fish have very short memories. I don't know if you've heard of this idea of maybe that a goldfish has a 7-second memory, or sometimes a 9-second or whatever, not a long memory at all. But this is definitely not true. I mean, it's true that it's hard to know what's going on in the mind of a goldfish or a little fish that's swimming around an aquarium, but they can learn things. They can remember things. If you have pet fish, you might already have found out that actually they learn pretty quickly where the time that you're feeding them and the place in the tank. They will congregate and wait for their food. They know it's food time. And studies are showing that fish can remember things for ages. I mean, sharks are pretty smart. They can remember things for years. They can learn. They can make friends. They have particular other sharks they like to hang out with. So I guess that really just reflects on the more complex lives these fish lead. And they're doing much more than we really give them credit for. And they can remember stuff for sure. Definitely for longer than 7 seconds.
Helen, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. It's been all my pleasure. Thank you.
That's UK-based marine biologist Helen Scales. We talked to her today about her book. It's called Eye of the Shoal, A Fish Watcher's Guide to Life, the Ocean, and Everything. Well, I know we have a lot of, bird watchers out there listening right now and around the state of Wisconsin. Do you consider yourself a fish watcher? Do you go snorkeling in Wisconsin, or have you traveled around the world maybe to go snorkeling and see some really cool fish in really cool places? You can let us know, tell us your fish watching story, or your fishing story, I guess. You could email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Share some pictures, maybe even videos while you're there.